Transformation of America by Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. Chapter 9, Ronald Reagan's American Dream, A Pandora's Box of Nightmares. My mind-controlled existence became more complicated after Senator Byrd introduced me to then-President Ronald Reagan in the fall of 1921 at a White House political party. Byrd told me, "When you meet the chief, imagine him with his pants down. He's most comfortable knowing you are imagining him with his pants down. He doesn't want formality." Former President Ford had conditioned me to dread the office of president, and I mechanically went through the motions of meeting Reagan. Reagan admittedly had seen the How to Divide a Personality and How to Create a Sex Slave videos made in Huntsville, Alabama. He acted very pleased with me as though I had participated in them willingly. Within the first few minutes of meeting Reagan, he was giving me acting tips to utilize in government operations and pornography. When you become your part, your performance increases, which in turn increases your ability to do your part for your country. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country your part, he instructed. Somehow, Reagan's reminder of Ford's and Vanderjagt's conditioning to Kennedy's quote seemed more patriotically significant than simply sexually entertaining politicians by waving a flag in my bottom. After gazing deep into his self-professed kaleidoscope eyes, each metaphorical phrase he spoke became life and breath to me. Reagan explained to me that the illegal CIA covert activities I was forced to participate in were justified as they funded covert activities in Afghanistan and Nicaragua. He explained, "America's freedom train is spanning the globe and sex is but a sidetrack to the ultimate course of freedom. Our job of procuring and transporting arms is the most difficult part of all. But it can and must be done. How can a man with no arms fight? These operations are necessary as American people raise too much hell about violence already, and it is better they're not informed of our supporting wars they cannot understand the significance of." I realize now that Reagan twisted reality to fit his personal perceptions rather than to adhere to Byrd's philosophy of providing excuses for what he deemed the order of things. In typical Reagan fashion, he did not perceive mind control as slavery, but as an opportunity for those who otherwise would have nothing in life. He claimed that multi-generational incestuously abused children like myself, or previously impoverished baseball players from third world countries and slums, are provided an opportunity to be all they can be through making a contribution to society, our nation, and the world, by utilizing their talents to maximum potential. With this altitude, Reagan displayed pride in the sick role he played as the Wizard of Ounce, directing Project Monarch slaves like myself. That night, Senator Byrd acted in the capacity of a pimp and prostituted me to Reagan. Referring to me as though I were a machine, Reagan asked Byrd, "Does she run on chemicals?" Meaning specific CIA drugs. Byrd answered, "She takes it in spurts." I noticed that Reagan's eyes lit up with perversion and understanding of Byrd's statement, which meant that I shared whatever drugs were in his system through his urine. Reagan later told me he preferred sex slaves equipped for this task since he, as president, should not have to get up in the night to urinate. "Well," Reagan said, holding up his glass, "all I've had to fuel her with is alcohol. That's not much of a jolt from a whiz of a wizard." Byrd chuckled at Reagan's unscripted joke and removed his gold cocaine vial from the inner pocket of his suit. He and Reagan discreetly turned their backs to the party while Byrd, spoon-fed, Reagan the drug up his nose. Before I left with Reagan, Byrd informed me that Uncle Ronnie doesn't sleep with his mommy, Nancy, and that he preferred snuggling into his L.L. Bean, light blue flannel sheets in his nightshirt and ridiculous nightcap because they're warmer, softer, more comfortable, and don't snore. Later, in his bedroom, Reagan accessed my sexual programming, and I became my part as a prostitute to Uncle Ronnie. Reagan did not move during sex. After all, that was my duty. And my duty was to please him, whatever it took, and it took more time than anything. Reagan never hurt me, he always made sure someone else did that, and used this as a bond to the little child, kitten, personality he always accessed for sex. Reagan's most apparent personality kink was his love for bestiality pornography. To according to my handlers, his passion for pornography escalated its manufacture and distribution during his administration. He wholeheartedly approved and encouraged the porn industry for funding covert activity. Many commercial and instructional, private, pornography films I and others participated in, referred to as Uncle Ronnie's bedtime stories, were manufactured solely for his pleasure, oftentimes according to his instruction, using freedom-trained slaves. After my initial meeting with Reagan, I was used in numerous films that were produced predominantly at Youngstown Charm School and/or by his chief pornographer, 3 Michael Dante, specifically to satisfy his perversions. These included a wide range of cryptic themes, but were mostly bestiality. Reagan often watched the videos while I was prostituted to him, requiring me to reenact the porn however possible. I first met Reagan's chief pornographer Michael Dante, also known as Michael Vitti, at an elite Nashville hotel where he was attending charity golf tournament festivities. Like CIA operative Charlie Pride's Pro-Am golf tournament in Albuquerque, New Mexico, this charity tournament provided a cover for the cocaine and white slavery operations that dominated the event. Houston and I often attended such charity events, as did Dante, but it was only after having met Reagan that Dante's and my paths crossed as arranged. Dante took me to his hotel room after our initial introduction. He snorted a few lines of coke, looked me over as though I were merchandise, and accessed my sex programming. He then arrogantly asked me if I knew who he was. He told me he lived in Beverly Hills, California and made movies. I thought he was referring to his box office flop, Winter Hawk, until he said, "Uncle Ronnie sent me. He wants me to make movies with you as your contribution. We're gonna have a good time, then he's gonna have a good time, and everybody's happy. You'll like that, won't you, baby? Get dressed. We're going back downstairs and make arrangements." Dante telephoned me often, professing our love through command reinforcements and making arrangements to meet me in specific places for producing Uncle Ronnie's bedtime stories and commercial porn. These locations included, among others, Tennessee, Florida, the Caribbean, and California. He often talked of owning me in the future, painting a picture of what life would be like living with him. His attitude toward women was atypical of slave owners and handlers, and he often quoted scripture to justify his dominance: "No arguments, speak only when spoken to, take a good beating now and then just to keep you in line, see to all my comforts and housework, and be on call 24 hours a day when I need a good whore." He gave me a slave bracelet, a trademark of his porn, and said, "A woman needs a chain. It's a public reminder of total commitment and devotion. A reminder of the chain of command. A woman is tied to her man. No man should be tied to a woman." Dante's Connecticut Italian roots are in the mafia, and it was a well-established fact that organized crime and government had a close working relationship where criminal covert activities were concerned. I met many of Dante's associates, and we already shared a few common contacts who were conduits between the mafia and CIA. These included Congressman Guy Vander Jagt, former President Gerald Ford, then Governor of Pennsylvania Dick Thornburgh, Congressman Jim Trafficant, Congressman Gary Ackerman, and Ronald Reagan. Dame related to me, when Reagan was Governor of California, we went to Dodger baseball games together and sat in the press box. I got to know him real well and we got along. So, he and Tommy, Lasorda, Dodger manager and their mutual friend, and I would continue partying after the game. I brought him a few girls, slaves, and we did business. "Really? Tommy Lasorda brought us together, you'll like him. I'll take you to meet him. We'll go to games together all the time, every chance we get. You'll love that, won't you, baby? You like a press box, baby? Dick says you do. I wasn't surprised that Dick Thornborough had talked about his previous perverse sexual activity with me at a baseball game back east any more than I was surprised to learn that Dante knew Thornborough through their mutual political and baseball ties. Dick Thornborough was governor of Pennsylvania during my tenure as a presidential model mind-controlled slave. He used his influence to bring Houston into Pennsylvania state and county fairs year after year for the purposes of cocaine and pornography distribution, as well as for prostitution of me to him on a regular basis. Thornborough was a heavy cocaine user, and was deeply involved in CIA covert activities, particularly Project Monarch. He was a firm believer in mind control, not only for sex training and government operations, but for sports. An avid baseball fan, Thornborough had much to share with Reagan, Dante and Lasorda. I had been giving handwriting analysis lectures on NCL's Norway cruise ship, my cover for covert operation, in 1987, and Thornborough and his friend Chicago Cubs baseball scout Jim Zierilla were in attendance. Afterward, Zierilla offered me a job with the Baseball Commission analyzing handwriting of their million-dollar babies, baseball players before they were signed up. Thornborough explained that the job may not fit into my schedule. Nevertheless, we met on several occasions during the course of the cruise, always for sex, but business was discussed as well. My programmed mind contained a baseball computer that was created for Reagan and used by many, including Thornborough, Lasorda, Dante, and Zierilla. It was packed with the binds of statistics in which they were interested, the codes, keys, triggers and hand signals of certain mind-controlled baseball players. Zierilla and Thornborough were cruising en route to the Dominican Republic to the CIA baseball mind-control farm to scout out new slaves. They talked excitedly about the prospect of winning large sums of money through gambling on rigged games. I had been aware for years that many pro players, particularly Lasorda's Dodgers, were mind-controlled and triggered to win or lose according to their owners' beats and favors. The Dodgers, Reagan's favorite American pastime, ball team continuously won, including the World Series during his administration. The Mafia was in on the bet rigging, and information was passed to certain ones through Thornborough and others as gleaned from my baseball computer, programming.4. To this day I am not certain who instigated the plastic surgery to which I was forcibly subjected, but soon after meeting Reagan and Dante I was scheduled for breast implants. Perhaps it was done for pornography. Perhaps it was Reagan's preference. I tend to believe it was a combination of the two and ordered since my breasts were no longer lactating. In the first commercial porn film Reagan had directed Dante to produce in St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, my breasts were still tender and swollen from silicone implant surgery. My appearance was not the only makeover I endured after meeting Reagan. Aquino and I were called to Washington, D.C. to revise my base core programming to override Senator Byrd's control for security reasons. Since Reagan had been shot, he took extra precautions to ensure his safety, which included directing Aquino as to how he wanted me programmed. Much to Aquino's dismay and embarrassment, Reagan admired the occult role that this Army Lieutenant Colonel played for mind control traumatization purposes, as it fit in with the public promotion of religion Reagan had launched. Reagan claimed to believe that the masses were easiest to manipulate through their religion, as were mind-controlled slaves like myself. While Reagan had Aquino in D.C., he demanded that he wear his black ritual robes to a White House party to reinforce the controlling superstitions of a few South/Central American diplomats. Aquino appeared foolish in the eyes of his peers. They knew Aquino's image was only a guise for psychological warfare, but his appearance at the White House in costume made Aquino look like he believed his own facade. Aquino got even with Reagan. Minutes before I was prostituted to Reagan that evening, Aquino ordered me into a closed side room where he very quickly had intercourse with me. When he finished ejaculating, he slapped me on the behind and disrespectfully said, "Take that to the chief." Earlier that day, Reagan instructed Aquino how to program me in keeping with spin programming depicted in their how-to videos. "Program it," Reagan said, referring to me as though I were an object, "under number one. I like the number one. It's the first, the best, and it promotes confidence like I've won." I observed Aquino giving him the intellectually disgusted look he reserved for anyone with the fortitude to make a suggestion to him, but tempered his reaction by giving some thought to the request. Since the how-to videos showed the sixth revolution to ignite the heat of hell for sex, no one would suspect I had sex programming under the first revolution. It would take some modification of my initial programming, but Aquino was sold on the idea. By programming me according to Reagan's instruction, Aquino would be able to provide added protection for Reagan, whereby any program I was under at the time would immediately become replaced by Reagan's number one as quickly as I saw him. This effective safety measure infuriated Burr the first time he saw me instantaneously switch out of his control in Reagan's presence. Additionally, Reagan discussed how Aquino could use me on various military and government installations to provide hands-on mind control demonstrations of the latest advancements in training by displaying the diversity of my presidential model programming. Reagan said the hands-on demonstrations could educate our boys in the military to the wonders of the mind control phenomena. Hands-on meant my sex programming would be used to pique their interests and lock bond them in. After all, entertaining the troops is a long-time American tradition. Aquino did the programming, and Reagan began making arrangements for the demonstrations, which brought me back around to Dick Cheney. Cheney would be acting in the capacity of my commander for the hands-on mind control demonstrations and other covert operations from then on. 1. Since I had no concept of time under mind control, the 80s seemed like one long day to me, whereby discerning exact dates is extremely difficult. Furthermore, I was programmed to believe that every encounter with certain individuals was the first time. I do know that I had been conditioned and programmed in preparation for Reagan since 1978 at NASA's Cape Canaveral in Titusville, Florida. 2. Reagan preferred illicit pornography videos such as Bestiality, while his favorite pornographic magazine was Larry Flint's Hustler. 3. Although Hollywood's Dante rivaled Larry Flint for the title of chief pornographer, producing video versions of Hustler's stills, Flint was unequivocally the official White House pornographer. Dante's covert filming of political perversion for blackmail purposes failed to gain him the international notoriety Flint maintained through his New World Order colleagues such as Presidents Reagan, Bush, and Ford, CIA Director Bill Casey, UN Ambassador Madeleine Albright, Senators Byrd and Specter, Congressman Traficant and Vander Jagt, Governors Thornburgh, Blanchard and Alexander, and various world leaders such as Prime Minister of Canada Mulroney, President of Mexico de la Madrid, and Saudi Arabian King Fahd, to name a few. 4. Having been out of circulation since my rescue did not preclude my ability to predict winners according to political favors, from George Bush Jr.'s Texas Rangers to the Toronto Blue Jays' victory during the Canadian political heel of NAFTA.